claim presidential immunity to overturn his felony conviction. In May, a jury found Trump guilty on 34 charges of falsifying business records related to a payment to Stormy Daniels, with whom Trump allegedly had an affair. In yesterday's ruling, Judge Juan Merchan rejected an argument that the Supreme Court's ruling on presidential immunity involving official acts should nullify the case. Merchan said the criminal charges stemmed from Trump's private acts prior to him becoming president. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 62 degrees and mostly cloudy. In New York City, 54 degrees and partly cloudy. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon. I'm Parisa Neruzzi, and this is Taking Action on WPFW 89.3 FM. We come to you every Tuesday at 1, bringing information and inspiration so that you can take action in our city. Fight displacement, save our schools and communities, stand up for justice, build our power, and hold government officials accountable. Taking Action is produced by the grassroots organization Empower DC. We welcome your feedback and your show ideas. You can reach out to Empower DC at 202-234-9119. And before I introduce my guests, I want to acknowledge that we're coming to the close of another very fast-moving year. I think this one moved quicker than ever, in my opinion. But this is the time of the year where we really reflect on how we are showing up for the work that we do, for the communities that we're part of, for our family, and for the institutions that support us like WPFW. And so I do want to encourage our listeners to please consider a gift donation to WPFW this season. WPFW is raising money during an end of year drive and asking that you give what you're able to give so that you can continue to enjoy the programming that we get to have here in DC on WPFW, which is such a important and unique resource for us. So please go to WPFWFM.org to donate. Again, WPFWFM.org. You can choose Taking Action from the drop-down box and help us reach our giving goal. But no matter which show you support, we just encourage you to take a moment. Please give a few dollars to WPFW when you're able. So every year, dozens of unhoused DC residents pass away, and one organization has been committed to honoring their memory through their ongoing fight for housing. Every year, I'm honored and grateful to my friends at the People for Fairness Coalition for their incredible work, and I'm always happy to welcome them on the airwaves to share with us what's going on this year, and of course, to invite the listeners to their end of year event and memorial. So I'm very happy to welcome leaders of the People for Fairness Coalition, Rochelle Ellison, Robert Warren, and Reggie Black, to share about their work, their upcoming annual memorial event, and how you can join and support. Thank you all so much for joining today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm always happy to have you guys on. And I'm a big fan and highly respect the work that you do. For the listeners who may not have heard of People for Fairness before, please give them just a little snapshot of what the organization stands for, and if you would also in that share a little introduction of yourself and your role with the organization. Rochelle, would you like to start?
Yes, I'm Rochelle Ellison. I'm the Assistant Director of People for Fairness Coalition. Our mission has been housing instability through advocacy, peer mentoring, and outreach. And we do this with passion. We come from the unhoused populations ourselves. I myself was out there 17 years with co-occurring disorders. And the moment that I prayed and asked what my destiny was going to be, this is the answer I got. I was going to go back to where I came from and fight and be a voice for those that don't have a voice, or teach them how to advocate for themselves.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Reggie?
Yes, I'm Reginald Black. I'm a longtime member. I handle most of the advocacy and the policy for People for Fairness Coalition. And I'm a native. And like you said, we try to end housing instability through those three facets: advocacy, outreach, and peer mentoring.
Thank you, Reggie. And Robert?
Yeah, thank you, Teresa. So good to see you again. Just echoing what's already been said. We're an advocacy organization. You know, we've been in this fight for housing justice for 16 years now, and trying to, build community awareness around folks who die, each year from preventable causes, in the community. So, and this year has been really sad and heartening once again with the numbers that we're seeing, and then we can talk a little bit about that, but I think it's already been kind of stated, what the mission of the organization is, and what our main focus is trying to bring about what you mentioned earlier, housing justice with long-term district residents and, those, living and suffering under poverty here in the District of Columbia. Mm.
And all of us here, agree that housing is a human right, and it should not be based on your income or whatever else. Housing comes first, and everything else follows from there. And I just want to acknowledge that you all are bringing not only your lived experience, your personal experience, but also this is your community, right? These are folks, we're talking about folks, we're going to talk about some numbers, but actually these are people that you know, and many of whom you know and have worked alongside. And so I want to, share my condolences with you as well. I'd love to highlight some of your incredible work. And you said you've been doing this for 16 years, and I've seen it. I've seen your effectiveness. I've seen that you've been able to accomplish many things that you've set out to do. So if you wouldn't mind, share some highlights of some of your accomplishments and some of your work over the years. Who would like to start? Robert?
Yeah, I think for the main part, we have our initiatives that we work on, and a lot of the work that Reggie did and engaged in, specifically the advocacy around criminalization of homeless individuals in the city. And us being able to accomplish, the city actually having what they call the Human Rights Enhancement Act that protect, add people that experience housing instability as a protected class. And with the climate that we're in now, I think, we need to really just double down on that, because one of the things that we were actually, discrimination that we're actually trying to highlight is that discrimination when it comes to people on fixed incomes and their ability to access housing that's affordable, sustainable, and accessible to them. And that's the only piece that's kind of lost in that legislation. But for the most part, that was a lot of work. It took us 10 years to get to that point. Then also the work that, the organization has done around public restroom initiative, just trying to make sure that folks have access to clean restroom, be able to access a restroom when they need to. That work has also taken us like 10 years, to accomplish. So, and we finally got two pilot restrooms that you can see in the city now. And then the other thing is, that I'm really proud of is, some of the advocacy work that we did was creating a new line item when it comes to housing, which is called Target Affordable Housing. We had a lot of members of this organization who constantly would come and testify about how they didn't need all of those wraparound services that come along with permanent supported housing. And they just needed housing that was affordable to them. And these were a lot of individuals in the city who were, you know, middle-aged or, you know, senior citizens who, for the most part, don't suffer under a lot of some of the conditions a lot of the homeless communities suffer under and just need affordable place to live. And so having that target affordable housing added as a way of a process of, you know, helping people get housed is something that we worked on for a number of years also, and is now part of DC Housing Authority's list of ways they help people with housing. So I don't know if Reggie or Michelle might have some other ones, but
I don't know. I have frozen, yeah. But if Reggie or Rochelle want to add.
Go ahead, Reggie.
Oh, definitely. We're now pioneering the case mentoring and the peer mentoring through using the homeless information management systems. We are actually directly working with people to get them housed. It's a very new program, but we've had some very, very positive marks. We've actually gotten 3 people, you know, teed up for a subsidy. So we're doing very well there. And we have at least 20 or so people we're engaged with every week. So, you know, there are only 4 of us, but we are a mighty team. And that work is ongoing, and it goes right along with the Universal Right to Housing initiative, in which we want to make sure that there's equity in people obtaining housing, number one, the services that they're receiving, number two, and that they have, you know, sustainable housing, which is safe and affordable for them to reside in.
Mm. Wonderful. Michelle?
And I'd like to say that through the Rhonda Whitaker Streets of Life DC Women's Initiative, the men fought for racial equity on the Interagency Council on Homelessness, and the Rhonda Whitaker Streets of Life DC Women's Initiative was born out of the Walden Adams Justice Grant. Mm-hmm. And since then, 2 of us have gotten seated on the full council of the Interagency Council on Homelessness, and we still have 4 women, and we're hoping to onboard more to the Interagency Council on Homelessness. We've got it on our agenda to add 2 more women to teach them how to advocate and use their voice for the issues that are at hand for the unhoused population, but are also for themselves to become their own best advocates as well.
Wonderful. You guys have had a huge impact. You continue to, and it's super powerful just to see you guys in action. I think Robert is even at the city council right now as we speak. So that's the, you know, persistent presence that you have, really checking everybody's, sense of conscience, right, around how are we treating our neighbors here in the city. And unfortunately, having worked on housing issues for a couple of decades here in the city, I can share your concern that things, you know, are pretty bad. They haven't gotten better, actually, in many ways. You know, there have been improvements through the efforts that you've done in certain programs, but on this whole, the housing crisis in the city is as bad as ever. And we've got, you know, a lot of evictions happening. We've got, you know, rapid rehousing where people are being pushed out. And I'm saying this to the listeners more so than you all, because you know this more than anybody, but just that we as a city have yet to really put our force behind solving the housing crisis. And we continue as a city to allow our lowest income residents to be in a persistent state of housing instability, consistently displaced again and again. And it's completely unconscionable. I want to turn to your upcoming events, and again, like, you know, part of this is to really prick the consciousness of the listeners. Those, you know, I think most of our WPFW family agrees with us that housing is a human right and should be made available. I'm not sure if everybody knows the scope and the scale of the unhoused community and what's been going on. Please share some of what we've experienced this year in terms of loss of the unhoused?
268 people were on the list of people that died. 110 of those were unhoused, and 104 people died while being matched. So they were matched to an agency and to a voucher and didn't make it to lease up and passed away. And that's the highest number I've seen so far. And it makes me pretty emotional because those are people that I know and those are people that we've worked with and worked alongside. And they passed without even receiving any kind of subsidy whatsoever, even though they were on their way. That's how long the process is for documentation. And I know the DHS has came up with the Peer Case Management Institute, but I'm sorry, at this point, it's not making a dent. Things are actually getting worse. We need more. We need more than that. Reggie and Robert?
Yeah. You're right about that. And when we say match, that means a person has a slot identified, a pile of money to use as far as that subsidy, but the processing of those payments to a landlord and to even find a landlord, those processes take so long that people are passing away while in the process. And it's one of those things that we need improvements on. We know that the ages of people are not their biological age. Homelessness ages you 10 to 20 years through the experience. So a person that's 50 has a health age of about 60. So people's health is exacerbated by their continued homelessness. And so the process taking so long then shows itself when you say you have 100 and something people who were matched with subsidy but didn't even make it to use that subsidy. This means we have to improve, you know, our health dynamics with the homeless community.
And I wonder if you could share a little bit more about that wait. So, you know, what's the average time that it's taking to get somebody from being matched with a voucher to actually getting housed? Do we have
I've heard anything from 6 to 12 months. Mm-hmm. Just to get someone processed all the way through the process and then be able to find a landlord that's quote unquote rent reasonable. This is something new that they're using. Mm-hmm. And it's taking more than 6 months, and people only really have 6 months or so, 8 months or so to use the subsidy. And with all of these different processes in line, first they got to get referred from DHS to DCHA, then DCHA has to go and process them for whatever subsidy it is, and in that time people, you know, languish and they don't even have any communication as to what's happening. This is why we created the peer mentoring program, because we want to be able to be behind the desk and look at why are things taking so long? How can we, improve the time that people are actually waiting? Like one of my clients now, they're telling him he has to wait a year and he just got, you know, matched. So I'm like, a year, like that's too long.
Right.
Who knows where he's going to be in 12 months. We need to shorten that time.
Right. We can't do long stay or homeless attestations until they've been homeless a year or more. And that's the sad piece, is if you're homeless, you're homeless. Right. But we cannot say they're chronically homeless until after 365 days.
Mm-hmm. And at that time, anything can happen as far as your health.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that definition of chronic homelessness kind of needs some tweaking, because like Rachel said, you have to be consistently homeless either for a full year or have what they call episodes. And you got to have at least 3 of those within 3 years. The things that we have to fit definitions, they're taking too long for people to fit definitions. And once they do fit those definitions, now you have the health problems.
Right.
And I would just like to add, that's why we're having this advocacy day, December the 19th.
Yes.
We want to go into the advocacy day full force with as many community members as we can. So we're incentivizing, but we're, you know, we're not, we don't want to pay people to show up. We want people to genuinely show up because you want to change your situation and share what you're going through, because there's nothing like a human story to be matched to a person. And they can't deny that if we have those people with us. So we want as many community members to come out with us and join us December the 19th at the Wilson Building. We will be there at 12. We have a room. Actually, we have two rooms now, 103 and 104. I'm not sure which one we're going to use. Mm-hmm. However, we will be there from with the room from 12 to 4. We will have refreshments. We want people to come out and face the council members, face their chief of staffs, and leave a mark. Leave something for them for the holiday season to go home with, that you're going home to your families, but we're going to be right here in the street unhoused, and some of us are going to die through the holidays. So make us a priority.
Yeah.
And we're going to stand with them. We're going to stand through that, and we're going to keep advocating for more resources, more housing vouchers, and more programs to be funded than last year, which was really disappointing. So this year, we're coming full force.
Yeah. Yeah, last year was devastating. And, you know, for the mayor and the council, but, you know, for the mayor to initially, she came into office, you know, 10 years ago saying she was going to end homelessness in D.C. Instead, she has cut housing programs, you know. So thank you for being down at the city council and being visible and forceful throughout the year. And again, listeners, they're welcoming you to join this Thursday, December 19th at noon at the Wilson Building, 1350 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest. So talk about then also the other part of your two-part event. You've got the memorial, 12th annual memorial and vigil to honor those that died without the dignity of a home. And that's coming up on Friday the 20th. Talk about that event.
If that event will be meeting at Luther Place at 4 o'clock, mm-hmm. as we have an empty coffin that represents every person that died without the dignity of a home. There'll be a program followed, speakers. We have some governmental speakers coming. We have national speakers mm-hmm. coming. I'll be moderating, and we want to at least say their name and give them the opportunity to be memorialized and recognized, because they have a right to be remembered as well. And then we shut down. We have a procession that we will march from Luther Place Memorial Church to Freedom Plaza, where there'll be tents already set up from Friday morning. We will come down there. We have an open mic. Please come and join us for the open mic, the program at Luther Place at 4 p.m. And that is 1226 Vermont Avenue Northwest at 4 p.m. And please come and remember those that died. And we're going to shut down half of 14th Street, and we're going to march and bring awareness. Reggie, Robert?
Yeah. Definitely come out and you know, make your voice heard both Thursday, Friday, and also, you know, come through on Saturday to pay your respects at the Church of the Epiphany at 1317 G Street Northwest as well. All of these events are to make sure that our unhoused neighbors are a priority, and that they aren't dying mats. They aren't dying literally homeless. They aren't dying, you know, 3 and 4 months after getting housed. We want to make sure that people, you know, have a certain, you know, way of life that they can thrive and live in the city and be able to age in place and all of these things you, like you alluded to, you hear the mayor talking about, which, you know, all the people that died homeless this year never had that opportunity. So we want to make sure that these people, you know, have that fullness of life and abundanceness, and to make sure that they can thrive and recover from homelessness. I mean, you have to have that recovery time from an experience like that. I mean, it's just, it's not easy. I went through it myself 10 years in the city, and I'm just recovering. I mean, it's an experience. And that doesn't define the people. These are people. They are special. They are unique. And they need the opportunity to be able to be special and be unique.
Talk a little bit more about some of the folks that you're memorializing. Give us some of these names and stories of some of these folks that you knew.
I'll only mention like one, because, we work with Street Sense Media a lot. And, and when we at Street Sense Media, if you go up into the lounge at Street Sense Media, there are pictures all around the walls of vendors who have died. And some of those vendors have died while homeless. And we just had a really remarkable young lady. She was a really remarkable young poet. And, she was tragically killed in the city. And I think the thing that's heartbreaking is that when we looked at the number of deaths that the Department of Health gave us, when we were doing a report out with the NH Council on Homelessness, the number of folks who were actually killed has risen, which is really unacceptable. And it just goes to show you this, how vulnerable men and women are, specifically women. And I know one of our members kind of tagged us, kind of years ago. I don't know if you're familiar with the woman who slept under the bridge on Pennsylvania Avenue for years. But I think when she died, that kind of touched us, touched one of our members specifically. And he kind of tasked, myself and other members to really think about, women out here unhoused and, that just so, it's just so unsafe for them in so many ways. And and us trying to really acknowledge this. But yes, we had the sister die who was a vendor. And
Red Book Mango, say her name. The community knows her as Red Book Mango. Eric Carter, or to name a couple of them that we know.
I actually
helped Derek's family get his remains.
I think that's the other piece that we're really, concerned about is like the number of folks and them not having access, families not having access to actually memorialize their loved ones, and they're just, I think we as a city and as a people are just kind of, it's heartening that, we don't honor our dead the way we used to. I don't know if it happened through the pandemic or just the way we look at life in general, but it's kind of sad that, people don't even get the dignity of a proper burial here in the city no more. And so that's something that we want to really try to highlight this year and build some awareness about and have some resources. At the end of the day, it's about having adequate resources for community members. So we want to keep our eyes on the ball and, making sure that, council knows, city knows that, there are community members that need access to resources to be able to, live, thrive, and be healthy here in District of Columbia.
Rochelle and Reggie, any other folks that you want to share a bit of their story?
Eric Carter, he was an amazing young man. He was just lost and losing hope out there homeless. And he was hit by a car on New York Avenue and First Street Northwest. And I found out about his death. And it's so sad because his family couldn't afford the $1,600. So I have a rapport with the ME's office. And it went from giving the remains to me for free during the pandemic to $485. When I went to go get Eric Carter, they charged me $685. So his family helped with the $685, and then I got the remains. But why should I, as a community member who does work at an organization, why should I have the ability? And why are you charging me for an unhoused individual's ashes to be turned out? You're even benefiting off his death. So now it's $885. They keep going up $200 every year. And that needs to change. And that is very sad. The families have to contact me to get a discount to pick up their loved one from Heaven Bound. So I have to actually go myself, pick up the remains and take it to the families. Or if they don't have families, you know, do a memorial service for them. And I've been doing it for years since the pandemic began. And it's really sad. Eric Carter was amazing. I knew quite a few people, but I don't want to say their names because I don't want to have their family's permission. And you don't want the families maybe hearing this and saying, hey, she didn't ask me permission to say their name. Although that's the whole purpose of bringing awareness that they were just as important as anyone else that has an obituary. We're kind of their verbal obituary, you know, so I'd like to get permission before saying a lot of the individual's names. That's why I didn't use real names.
Sure. And even if you don't use a name, if you want to share any other stories of who, you know, what, how you knew them or what you knew of them or what happened.
Eric and I were actually homeless together. We were actually in a homeless family together, and I made it out and kept going back. But as I stated, when individuals are like, don't see themselves in another light, or their thought process hasn't changed, or they don't see the light in you to know that they can do it as well, or their confidence is not there, then they end up just feeling hopeless and still being out there. What's sad is, as many people as you try to reach out to, it's not your call who lives and who passes. You know, as much as you'd like to be the reason that they might fight and get go forward and move forward with me walking beside them in the maze in this journey called life, it just doesn't happen the way you see it in your mind. So it's heartbreaking because I knew Eric for over 25 years. Wow. And to be able to have to hold his ashes and see his brother cry as he's pouring his ashes in the urn, it was a very personal, emotional experience for me. But I'm just grateful that God placed me in a position that I was able to do that, to give his family closure and to have closure for the people in the community.
Yeah.
I never seen myself doing these things as well when I was homeless for 17 years. But making it out means I have a duty and an obligation to go back and show people that this can be done, and this is what I can help you with, and this is what I can do for you. And that's why I'm so grateful for People for Fairness Coalition as the platform. I've had so many doors open on using this platform, and it gives me the resources to help someone else.
Yeah. Reggie, did you want to add any reflections on those we lost this year?
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, myself, I end up knowing people, but it isn't until I actually see the names and the ages that I didn't realize who these people were, but I know that there was one or two people that, you know, that we lost. We've even lost members before while homeless, and it's just heartbreaking to see our community suffer under these conditions, and to have people that you actually know, like, pass away and you see them deteriorate and these types of things, it makes it even harder to kind of let go of things. I mean, it's very hard to lose someone in the first place with under quote unquote normal circumstances, but then that person's unhoused, you may not have seen them for years. These kinds of things are very, very hurtful. And usually I don't even know who it is till we actually read the names and the ages, and people point out, oh, that's so-and-so and that's so-and-so. And it's just, there are a lot of things that need to be improved, and like them charging for people's remains, that's not cool. You know, that families should be able to bury their loved ones without, you know, a whole myriad of costs that they may not have. They may not have the funds or resources to do that. And the city is supposed to provide that. But if you look at what they have budgeted every year for burial assistance, it's just dismal. Like, that is not enough to help people. So we need to improve that.
Give me a snapshot of where do we stand as a city right now? I know there's a count that happens every year. I know you guys keep track of, you know, how full are the shelters. I know there's usually like a number of, we know what the numbers are in terms of kids enrolled in public schools that are experiencing homelessness, but where are we right now? I mean, is it, have we started to reduce homelessness in the city? Are we pretty much staying the same, or is it getting worse?
They say the numbers are reducing, and that is a lie. Mm. They only say that because that's what they want the community to believe. The numbers are definitely not reducing. The numbers are definitely getting higher. Reggie?
Yeah. You will hear the city tell you that they have a subsidy for every family that comes in the system. But there is a very large and growing disparity between families and singles. And you can see that unaccompanied people are the ones who remain homeless, who don't have enough of the resources, who have their resources cut a lot of times. And we know that that disparity is getting larger and larger. And the people that we're talking about, they're aging as well. So we need to make sure that we have enough subsidies or enough resources for single adults. This is an area that has needed focus for a while. And just in general, when you're talking about people in this city who are unhoused, who are homeless, you're talking about African-American people, you're talking about Black folks overwhelmingly. So that equity means that they need extra resources and, you know, hands up. That's the crux of the problem. 80% of those deaths are somebody Black. And these are things that people don't talk about. Even though we're 40 some so percent of the population, we're 80% of the homeless community. And those singles are aging, and a lot of them are men. And one population that goes miss is unaccompanied women, and their resources, like their entire system, compresses in out of winter to where they don't even have any beds anymore. So
Wow,
we have to do better.
So I noticed it's 137. I'm sorry, Rob, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to just kind of piggyback on what Reggie was saying, specifically around the aging population, because I know that report that came out yesterday that Rochelle received from TCP was what the disturbing part for me was, you know, seeing people 77 and 60s, you know, in their 60s, you know, these elderly individuals in the community actually dying, you know, while homeless is just so unacceptable. And I know I've heard the mayor in support of a fully funding the voucher system, specifically for individuals over the age of 55. I think if we actually just could get that done with the aging population, particularly between, you know, Black men and women in the city, then that would cut, you know, homelessness in half. And I'm sure it would go a long way to reducing the number of deaths that we actually occur each year. So yeah, I mean, there's, you know, it's really hardening, not just the deaths, but those elderly people are dying, you know, and it's, I think it's a lack of respect for our elders in the city and just in the country at large, you know. And I don't know what that looks like coming up with our new administration, but yeah, I just wanted to really highlight the number of the aging people who, you know, we have on these lists. I think the highest age was like 83 years of age.
Wow. 83, and the youngest was 17.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine an 83-year-old person being homeless in D.C.? It's just...
We have 1 minute.
Or a 17.
I know she has
a... Yeah, please, Rochelle, I want you to go ahead and bring it home. Remind the listeners of how they can support everything that you're doing.
Yes, please come and join us December the 19th at the Wilson Building, 1350 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest. You can come as early as 12 noon. We'll be doing walkthroughs from 1 to 3. Please come to Luther Place Memorial Church on Friday, 4 p.m. for the program to honor those who die without the dignity of a home with a procession to follow. There'll be a tree planting blessing, and we will get down to Freedom Plaza, have open mic night. The council members will be there. Please come and use your voice and speak about your issues and join us in advocating for more resources for the unhoused population so that they don't have to die without the dignity of a home. And thank you so much for having us.
We're happy to have you anytime. And again, folks, please also go to the website, pffcdc.org, People for Fairness Coalition DC, pffcdc.org, and make a donation. Check out the information, sign up to receive updates. Thank you all so much for everything that you do.
Thank you for what you do as well.
Appreciate you so much. We'll be back in 1 minute with our next guest.
Thank you, guys. Peace.
Thank you.
To see the ones you once looked down on up and taking the lead. You heard the last shall be first, but you did not believe it till now. Heaven help me if I ever deceive the humble and the children and the elders in need. I never knew my truth, so it could not set me free until now. This home is the only home I ever called my own. So if you're gonna tear it down slow.
Had to share a little bit of Courtney Dow, our local singer-songwriter who just is so amazing, and I love her song Ballad of Tent City that we were just listening to. But now I'm really happy to welcome our next guest, Ruth Ann Norton, who is with the Green and Healthy Homes Initiative. Listeners, you may or may not know that the Biden administration has led unprecedented investments in environmental justice, and that established several grant programs that are meant to support the grassroots work that advances environmental justice at the state and local level. And Ruth Ann and her organization are helping to get some of those dollars out. And I'm happy to have her join so that you can hear what you can do to access some of those funds. Ruth Ann, thank you so much for joining Taking Action.
First of all, what a privilege and just a gift to join and hear the music. The words, right, and the music, just amazing. And thank you for having us. So I'm Ruth Ann Norton, and I'm the president and CEO of the Green and Healthy Homes Initiative. And people may say, well, why is a healthy homes organization tasked with giving out environmental justice grants, $50 million of environmental justice grants, 50 plus million of environmental justice grants to broad issues that may be about rivers and streams or illegal dumping or moving from coal country to clean energy in our tribal communities, in our rural communities, in our hard to reach communities, as well as our bigger cities in Region 3. So I'm so glad to have that conversation about Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Virginia, Maryland, DC, and this region and what we hope to achieve. So thank you for having us.
Well, we're grateful that you joined us because we know that there's a deadline coming up and we wanted to make sure that folks, right, have another opportunity to at least hear and get in line to receive some additional assistance if it's available. So yeah, share a bit more about what funds are available, what types of projects are being funded, and exactly who might be eligible to apply.
Yep. And I'm going to say it 1,000 times over and I'll share it 1,000 times over, www.ghhi.org/thrivingcommunities, right? Or email us at thrivingcommunities@ghhi.org. But here's what we're doing. We are giving away $50 million in four categories to support a very broad set of on-the-ground environmental justice initiatives, addressing, as I said, all sorts of issues, whether it's emissions coming out of a smelter, or you know, unsafe chemicals being used, or land management, right, in runoff, or it could be cleaning up homes for lead and asthma triggers and poor indoor air quality, or weatherizing houses, or moving to electrification, whole range of issues depending on where you live. And the way this is working is we have 2-year grants and 1-year grants. The 2-year grants, one category of that is full-on implementation, $350,000. That deadline currently is December 30th. Sounds soon. Everybody's busy with various and sundry types of holidays that they may be celebrating with their community, with their families, with their friends. But we've created kind of a very straightforward, thoughtful, but less difficult than big federal grants process. So, you know, a 7-page or so narrative that includes, you know, what's going on in your community, what's the need that you see, and describe whether you have data or you're a community where data hasn't been collected on this yet. That's, you know, not just describe what's going on and what you want to do to advance that issue. We're also doing 2-year grants, 1 to 2-year grants as you choose, on planning grants for big issues, $250,000, going down 1-year grants to do assessment with your community, to build advisory boards, to receive input, to do feedback loops, to start that planning process, right? And you can do demonstration within those things too, to help you of the work you want to do. And the 1-year grants, the portal will be open until April. And then there's another category, a little bit north of 10 grants, that'll be given out on a discretionary basis by our advisory, wonderful organization, United States Environment and housing organizations, and Invest Appalachia, and a number of other good organizations, Young Gifted and Green, and Chisholm Legacy Project. That advisory board, made up of 11 members from across the region, will give out the $75,000 discretionary grants. And that's for organizations that, you know, are really resource constrained, brand new. They may not yet, you know, be in any position to be doing audited financials, could be just compiled financials. And all of these, right, can work on a broad set of areas that are on our website and for which people contact us, we can share with them. We also will be doing office hours. We'll do one-on-ones to help people talk about their eligibility, how to get into the portal. Couple of key things. You have to have what's called a UEI number, but we'll help you get that too. That's when you go on SAM.gov and you do that. If you're not a 501c3 nonprofit, but you can find a fiscal sponsor and you're doing community work because you've not yet formulated everything, that's acceptable. Local governments, especially in our rural communities, in our hard-to-reach communities that are working with and in disadvantaged communities, which I'll come back and talk about throughout the region, you're eligible. Universities, who are also teaming up with community to do work, eligible. And then disadvantaged communities on our website, we have a tool that takes you through and says, you know, is your work going to happen? Has to all happen in a disadvantaged community. Our goal, our focus is to fund the community, not fund from, you know, New York to do something in Southwest Virginia or on the Eastern Shore of Delaware. But regardless, the work has to happen in community, for community, around environmental justice. We will spend time, as I said, with applicants to make sure they can get their application. What we can't do is tell the applicant what to apply for, like what they should be working on. But we can tell them if it's eligible, if they've gotten the right things. But this is a one time. We don't know that this will ever come back again. We want to prove that this is going to be great and that the EPA and the federal government will do more co-investing with community action, right? But there'll be the grants. Really encourage people to take some holiday time, pick up $350,000 for good efforts. Let's go, right? Let's go. We will give you feedback, right? If you're putting in for the 1 and 2 year, we'll even give you feedback on the 350. So to apply for the 1 year, if you don't make that, we've asked to extend the portal. Well, we have no extension of that portal into January. So December 30 is our deadline. And, you know, we just want to get people in there, the dollars. And I'll tell you why, Teresa. Mm-hmm. We were the organization that started with one person, one idea, and $17,000. Mm-hmm. Our original goal was take on the issue of lead poisoning in Baltimore City, because young Black and brown children were not getting a fair shot in their classrooms. And we have lowered the lead poisoning rate by 98% and have grown into one of the most influential organizations working on healthy housing and the intersection of climate, health, and housing. So I know we don't have a lot of time, but email us at thrivingcommunities@ghhi.org. Or go on our website, ghhi.org/thrivingcommunities.
What a wonderful opportunity. Thank you so much. And I enjoyed that little snippet of the organizational history. We'll have to invite you back to learn more about everything that you guys have been up to.
I would love it. If you promise good music, I'll be right back there with you.
Yeah, you're welcome anytime. And again, thank you for your leadership in helping to get these dollars out. Listeners, if you're part of an effort, if you know of an effort that might be a good fit, please go to the Green and Healthy Homes Initiative website. Please email thrivingcommunities@ghhi.org and find out more information. Thank you, Ruth Ann. Look forward to staying in touch with you. And thank you to our listeners. Before we close, I just want to remind everybody that we are in the pledge drive for WPFW, which is another worthy investment, worthy cause to support our local media and platforms like this, where you can hear about campaigns that you benefit from. So please go to WPFWFM.org. Make a donation just like we just did from Empower DC to support our beloved station. And in the meantime, everybody get ready for a hopefully peaceful holiday season with your family and loved ones. Let's continue to do the good work that we're doing to make this world a more just and fair and a loving place. And thank you all for being part of our community this year. Stay tuned for COVID Race and Democracy, but first the news.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. A memorial has taken shape outside of Abundant Life Christian School in Madison, Wisconsin, after a deadly shooting took place there yesterday, marking at least the 83rd school shooting of 2024. Police responded to the shooting after a second grader called 911. Authorities, who are still searching for a motive, identified a 15-year-old female student at the school as the shooter. She is believed to have died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, though the medical examiner has not confirmed a cause of death. Before she allegedly ended her life, the teenage shooter killed a fellow student and a teacher and injured six other students and teachers. Of the six who were injured, at least two are in stable condition as of this morning. Police have not suggested whether they believe any of the victims were specifically targeted. Authorities will hold a press briefing today at 2 p.m. Eastern to provide an update on the situation. Today, a San Francisco jury found a tech consultant guilty of second-degree murder in the stabbing death of Cash App founder Bob Lee in April of 2023. Jurors took 7 days to deliver their verdict against the consultant, Nima Momeni, whom prosecutors said planned the attack on Bob Lee, driving him to an isolated spot under the Bay Bridge and stabbing him 3 times with a knife he took from his sister's kitchen. They say Momeni was angry with Lee for introducing his younger sister to a drug dealer that she says gave her drugs and then sexually assaulted her. Momeni, who studies martial arts, claimed self-defense and said he didn't realize he had fatally wounded Lee or that Lee was even hurt. However, after Lee was stabbed, he was found staggering on a deserted downtown street, dripping a trail of blood and calling for help. The 43-year-old later died at a hospital. TikTok is one of the most popular social media apps in the world, with over 1 billion users worldwide on a monthly basis. TikTok has now asked the Supreme Court to step in on an emergency basis to block the federal law that would ban the app in the United States, unless its China-based parent company agrees to sell it. Lawyers for the company and China-based ByteDance urged the justices to step in before the law's January 19th deadline. A similar plea was expected from content creators who rely on the platform for income and some of TikTok's more than 170 million users in the United States. The companies have said that a shutdown lasting just a month would cause TikTok to lose about a third of its daily users in the U.S., and significant advertising revenue. To the D.C. area, a celebration of life service began this morning in Landover, Maryland, for fallen activist Cornelius Neal McDonald. 33-year-old McDonald was killed outside of Jasper's restaurant in Largo, Maryland, after an argument with a man inside the restaurant. That man, who reportedly bragged about the fatal shooting in an online video, has been charged with first-degree murder, first-degree assault, and related charges. Since his untimely passing, Cornelius McDonald has been praised for his passionate community work. He founded a nonprofit organization called Stay Solid, committed to addressing the connection between mental health challenges and community violence. He was inspired to do so because his own brother, Devin, was killed by someone struggling with mental health. In his obituary program, several family members, including his mother and son, shared memories and commended Cornelius McDonald for his compassion, generosity, and strength. In today's weather, it's currently about 63 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe, and thank you for listening.